The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
We're also seeing some more headlines that Bannon is predicting that Donald Trump will win in 2020. Let's trade all of this, start off with what was probably the most surprising comments, and that was the hawkish tone, hawkish in terms of China, from Larry Kudlow. Didn't hurt stocks today, Guy.
Didn't hurt stocks at all. I thought Larry looked great, and he sounded fantastic. He made some really salient points. You thought his comments would hurt the market. Clearly, it doesn't. I tell you what's sort of the most interesting thing to me at a very interesting day were the comments out of Mary Erdos from J.P. Morgan. She mentioned what concerns her, what gives her weighs on her, are the violent moves they're seeing in currencies, not least of which is the U.S. dollar, something that Dan and Tim have talked about. And the other thing, something they spend an inordinate amount of time and money on, cybersecurity, which really justifies the move you've seen in Palo Alto Networks. So Larry did his thing. It didn't have any effect on the market. But what I take away were those two comments, the fact that the currency moves concern her and the amount of money being spent on cybersecurity.
The Dixie is almost at a one-year high here,
yeah,
Tim.
Yeah, I have to tell you, for a guy that thinks and has thought that the dollar was going to run out of gas at 95 on the Dixie, there's some things that I heard today and that I've heard over the last couple of weeks that at least here's what you want to think about. This is an administration, and this is consistent with Guy's talking about with Larry. This administration is going to go for it with China. And you don't want to hear me talk politics. This is not politics. What I'm saying is they've got momentum here to dig in. And if they've got a 4% economy, as they think, they're not necessarily worried about some of this short-term stuff. That, to me, says this drags on. A stronger dollar, by the way, offsets tariff pressures. It's certainly a deflationary force for the economy if they're worried about that. So I think the dollar may be somewhat in play here. I think at a minimum, I think the domestic stories, the industrial stories, got a bigger bid today. I think the bottom line here is trade is going to be with us for a long time. I'm an EM guy. China's 40% of the EM index. This does not feel good for emerging market investors.
It felt like there was a ceiling that emerged from that discussion with Kudlow in terms of the amount of goods, the dollar amount of goods that could face tariffs. Jim tried to push Larry and say, should we go $500 billion? Should we go the full amount that we take in from China on a yearly basis? And Larry didn't want to go there.
Yeah, that part was interesting. I think the other interesting part is what Larry said and the reaction and how resilient the market has been. I mean, time and time again, and this has been what the Trump presidency has been about. A lot of flash, a lot of, people are looking around and trying to decide this is going to be something awful. And the duration of these moves has been very, very limited. And including today, you would have thought the market might start to tip over a little bit just because, we've gotten through the financial earnings. We're looking ahead a little bit and people are now focusing on exactly that. And it didn't happen. And meanwhile, you look at the industrials, you look at healthcare, you look at technology. There are parts of the market that still, in my opinion, actually look cheap. And the VIX is certainly cheap.
Well, last week we played this game where we're going to break out at 2,800 in the S&P 500. Yeah. And I think all of us, the answer was, well, it's probably more like 2,900 is the level, or 2,950, which was the prior high on January 26. And it seems like that's a foregone conclusion at this point that the S&P is going to test that. We know the NASDAQ and the Russell 2000 have already made new highs. I'll just mention this. When you think about, your commentary about trade, I mean, when you think about what drove that last leg of the market in 2017, I think it's really important to remember that the S&P 500 at one point in early January is up 30% from the late 2016 highs. 30%. So there was a lot of the deregulation, a lot of the optimism about tax cuts, that sort of thing. So we kind of overshot. That looked a little bit like a runaway breakout, right? Like with no fear in sight. I think the biggest drawdown peak to trough was 3%. We know where vol was all last year.
Well, I'm confused.
So what
I'm saying
is this year we've had this thing. The breakout, we're talking about it a little bit higher. We got to talk about getting through the January highs, and then we kind of see what happens as far as the market's concerned, because my point is that we have this trade thing is going to go to the midterm.
Okay, but
the Chinese are not going to settle this before then. So you're talking about all these threats. We are going to get ratcheting it up to hundreds of billions of dollars.
Okay, I'm not sure what you're saying. What I heard you say that I think is very
important.
Funny?
I wasn't even talking to you, actually, so that's okay.
Let's keep going.
Anyway, come on.
What I heard you say that I thought was interesting was that back in January, there was no fear. I actually think there's a lot of fear in the markets right now, and I think that's good for the stock market. I think actually we've repositioned substantially. I think because we're at a place, whether it's the Citi Surprise Index, whether there's people harping on the yield curve, whether there's people worried about the banks, I think people are very worried about trade. I think that's good for the market going higher, and I actually think that's part of the dynamic at work.
I would say trade is the only word. I mean, it really, honestly, it seems to me that everybody's focused on, you know, trade is obviously front and center every single day, ever since Trump really started to ratchet this up, not just with China, but everywhere else around the world that we've ratcheted. So, I mean, that has been an issue. But other than that, I see people looking at it and we see these earnings. I mean, this is very early. We're only 10% of the S&P so far. These earnings have been crushing.
You think trade is the only worry out there?
I think it's the biggest
worries. Don't you think there's a huge worry that we have an increasingly illegitimate president in the White House who does not have country?
Is that really a worry right now? No, honestly, Dan, is that really? I'm not talking from a political side here.
I think a lot of our viewers are not focused on it. I think they should.
In all honesty, Dan,
the market hasn't flinched on that.
I've heard this kind of stuff on the rhetoric on the network for since Trump got in. And all I can say is you have to keep your head up and look at what the markets are doing. And I don't feel like people right now have the if they had the concerns that you're talking about, there would certainly be much more volatility and some sellers in the market, in my opinion.
I got to tell you, I also think that the market, if anything, what you've seen in the last 48 hours is the market doesn't care at all. And I don't think the market, at various times in the last 3 months, ultimately, yes, trade matters, and we've tried to quantify it. The other thing is, this week, we had Fed Powell, Humphrey Hawkins' testimony. If anything, as much as he tried to tightwalk this, the Fed basically gave you more room to say they're going to be less hawkish, and that's bullish for markets.
I want to go no spin zone now. Let's talk about some of the names that were actually mentioned at this conference. Mm-hmm. Long Huntsman, long Take-Two Interactive, long Biogen, short EDH, EVHC, short MD.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure the guys have views on these. Biogen, for me, is sort of there's huge optionality. If they get Alzheimer's right, that stock is pretty could be a double from here. I'm not trying to be hyperbolic. That is actually fact. They rely on their MS business right now. They get Alzheimer's right, it doubles. But the most interesting one, and we've had the CEO on, Take-Two Interactive. People will knock this on valuation, justifiably so with their earnings growth, but this is a hot space, as Tim has pointed out a number of times. Samantha Greenberg, I think, pitched it, thinks it's going to 170. I think your downside is 100. So in risk-reward, I think Take-Two is the best one out there.
Coming up, we've got much more from the Delivering Alpha Conference. Michelle Caruso-Guevara still talking to Steve Bannon, as you see there. That's a live shot. But we also heard from a number of other big names on Wall Street, including interviews with those two men right there, Barry Silbert of Digital Currency Group and Circle CEO Jeremy Allaire. They are two of the most prominent voices in the world of crypto, and we will hear from each of them later on. Plus, we're all over the after-hours action. Dow stocks, IBM, American Express, both reporting earnings moments ago. You see their split trades here. We'll bring you the very latest. We're live at the Nasdaq market site in New York City's Times Square. Much more Fast Money right after this.
You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Welcome back to Fast Money. You're looking at a live shot of the 8th annual Delivering Alpha Conference just a few blocks away in New York City, where stocks, bonds, Bitcoin were all hot topics. Our Bob Pisani is there live with a look at all things crypto from today's conference. Hey, Bob.
Hello, Melissa. The bulls and bears on crypto is very much in evidence at Delivering Alpha. Just finishing up here at the Pierre, Mark Lazary from Avenue Capital took a very aggressive bull position. He argued that as Bitcoin gets more mainstream, the price will rise.
I think then you'll start seeing the price of it as it's easier for people to buy. I think then you'll have something that'll end up being somewhere around sort of, you know, 20,000 to 40,000.
Lazary's putting his money where his mouth is. He says he has invested 1% of his net worth in Bitcoin. Elsewhere, others took the opposite side of the argument. Oaktree's Howard Marks said Bitcoin was a trade, but it's not an investment, and that in the long run, he doesn't think it will show any substance. Now, Citadel's Ken Griffith said he's still scratching his head about all this Bitcoin hype. saying not a single portfolio manager, he says, has told him to buy crypto and that he has a hard time being a liquidity provider to a product that he doesn't believe in.
There's no need for cryptocurrencies. They're a solution in search of a problem from my perspective. What's unfortunate is the amount of hype and the number of early investors who've been caught up in this hype.
Over in Washington, Federal Reserve Chair Jay Powell, in his second day of congressional testimony, said that cryptocurrencies are not real currencies because they have no intrinsic value. Also, there was significant consumer protection issues, Powell said, and he also said the Fed was not interested in doing a digital currency of its own. And Melissa, of course, you had your crypto panel. I was very intrigued by Digital Currency Group founder Barry Silbert's comment that the Bitcoin bottom is in for the year. I'm sure you'll take that up with him next. And Melissa, Pete, Tim, Dan, Guy, the cocktail party's starting. Get back here.
I don't know. We were asked to leave. I don't know how to take that, Bob. Thanks so much.
The party doesn't start until you get here, guys. Come on. We're waiting. It's
right on.
Just coming on right here.
All right. You know my drink, Bob. I'll see you later. Bob Pisani. I'm joined now by the Crypto King, Barry Silbert, CEO and founder of Digital Currency Group. Barry, great to see you again.
Hello, everybody.
Great time at the panel, and so I'll key off exactly what Bob said. The Bitcoin bottom is probably in. What caused that bottom, do you think, to be put in place? What caused that surge above 7,000 that we saw so suddenly, it seemed?
I think it's a lot of people were looking for the bottom. A lot of institutional money with dry powder looking for an opportunity to get in. And I think the bears just kind of ran out of energy, ran out of Bitcoin to sell. And I think from a technical perspective, it's starting to look pretty good. And when the chair of the Fed says negative things about Bitcoin, and Howard Marks says negative things about Bitcoin, and Ken Griffin says negative things about Bitcoin, and Bitcoin doesn't move, I think that's a really bullish sign.
You're clearly a believer in cryptocurrencies and all the platforms surrounding cryptocurrency. But when you have the Fed so outspoken against cryptocurrencies, when you have the head of the SEC so outspoken against ICOs and cryptocurrencies, aren't you swimming upstream at this point? I mean,
yeah.
That's the best part.
That's the best part. I mean, that's really where you make money, when you're swimming upstream. And look, I started buying Bitcoin in 2012 when the price was $10. And I've gone through now two 80% corrections, and this was like a 65% correction. It's the same old criticisms, and I think a lot of it is they're uninformed. Because I think everybody on this desk, anybody who spends the time to look into what is this asset class, why is it important, why does it have such potential, they come out of it being a believer. They don't have to be running around like I am, you know, kind of evangelizing, but they come out of it saying, I'm going to put some money to work in this asset class.
Barry, you mentioned institutional money was looking for an entry point here. You know, from just the people that I talk to, it doesn't seem a lot of the traditional hedge funds, like the ones that were delivering alpha today, even have the infrastructure to invest in crypto assets. Do you see those more traditional hedge funds considering how to custody, how to trade these sorts of things? Is this the biggest pain point? Is there a strong interest other than the ones who are just crypto dedicated funds?
So the principals, the traders, yeah, they've been dabbling in crypto for years.
Yeah.
The funds themselves, they're starting to put some money to work. One of our companies is Grayscale Investments, which is the largest asset manager in the space. We announced today, or published our first half report, $250 million raised to date across our eight funds. 56% came from institutions. A year ago, 2 years ago, it was almost non-existent. So we're starting to see that money come in, but we need custody solutions. And I think what you'll hear from a lot of them is, we don't want to be first, we want to be second. Fast second follower, we don't want to be last, we don't want to be first.
Barry, you've been first in a lot of this cycle, or at least different parts. Do you care more about the currencies and the tokens now, or do you care more about the platforms? And where are you guys investing, and how are you separating the two?
So we've invested in 130 companies. I would say it's entire spectrum, blockchain, wallets, exchanges. Candidly, on the enterprise blockchain, very little traction, very little evidence that there's product market fit. I'm really all about the store of value prop, and I'm all about the infrastructure that's required to create the on-ramps and the off-ramps for Wall Street to get involved in this asset class. And that is being built right now. 2019 is going to be an enormous year because it's going to be not just easy to get involved, but it's going to be socially acceptable.
When do you think we'll see the differentiation in trade between the different cryptocurrencies? They should trade very differently, in theory.
I'm hoping that the movement of Wall Street into this asset class is, which is going to bring kind of more of a fundamental valuation approach to this asset class. There's thousands of them out there. There's only five that we like. There's only five that we have money in. The other 99%, I think, are going to zero.
What is your allocation?
All right, so we have 50% in Bitcoin, and this is the Digital Currency Group balance sheet. 50% in Bitcoin, 25% in Ethereum Classic, ETC, 15% in Zcash, 5% in Decentraland or Mana, and then our newest one is 5% in Zencash.
Do all of these have to be commodities versus securities? I mean, how do you, this is DCG's allocation, so you have to be careful in terms of regulatory
issues. Sure. Well, look, Chairman Clayton has made it pretty clear that most or all ICOs are securities. So I'm pretty skeptical about ICOs. We don't really play in the space. We have companies that are involved, you know, as an exchange or a wallet. But in terms of where we're putting our money, we're staying away from the ICOs and focusing on things, on assets that have a store of value aspect to them.
Okay, hold on, Barry. Speaking of Bitcoin, we have an alpha alert. Michelle Caruso Cabrera just got off the stage with former White House Chief Strategist Steve Bannon, who is a crypto enthusiast. Michelle, what do you say?
So, yeah, we talked about a number of topics. We talked about the midterms. We talked a lot about China. We also talked about the president's performance with Vladimir Putin in Helsinki. Implicitly, Steve Bannon acknowledged it wasn't the president's finest performance. Ultimately, he thought the president did fine.
The president's got a lot at stake in Russia vis-a-vis China. I think the president's done a terrific job, particularly vis-a-vis all the previous presidents. And I thought the press conference was fine. I would like to be a little stronger, maybe, about the meddling. But at the end of the day, and the Democrats are just going to have to embrace this, the meddling is on the margins, right? Just not that big a deal.
We spent most of the discussion talking about China. That is what Steve Bannon thinks about the most. He thinks we've been at war with China now for decades. He thinks that ultimately the U.S. is going to win. He thinks victory means that they're eventually going to end some of the policies, or a lot of the policies, that the president has found unacceptable, such as shared force technology transfers, etc. The other thing that I asked him about towards the end, especially for you guys, because I know you're very interested in, is cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin. He owns Bitcoin. He's a fan of Bitcoin. I asked him where he thinks this is all going.
I think these cryptocurrencies have a huge aspect in the future. Obviously, the day there's problems about the markets, the problems about what it's used
for. But what do you own? We know you like. I mean, you're
like
record.
I like Bitcoin.
You own it?
I own Ethereum.
What do you got?
No, I've got that, and I'm working on a number of. I think 90% of the ICOs have been a disaster. We're working on some tokens now, utility tokens potentially for the populist movement on a worldwide basis that we're thinking about. They have to be quality. The problem is, there's been too many investors, I think, have been blown out by things that were not thought through.
Ivanka,
but they're the future.
He acknowledges that he talks to people in the White House all the time and suggested that he still communicates with the president, though it's not clear how often that is and whether or not he was joking. He said only if they have a lawyer present or involved. Guys, back to you.
All right. Thank you, Michelle. Michelle Caruso Cabrera, hot off the stage with her talk with Steve Bannon. So clearly he's an enthusiast. I mean, maybe it's not a surprise that he is an enthusiast. He is sort of a power to the people kind of guy, and that's exactly what cryptocurrency is. That's sort of one edge of it. How do you get this to be more mainstream for the institutions to come in?
Well, the infrastructure is being built. The custody solutions have to get rolled out. But frankly, 12, 24 months, they've been researching and trying to build investment theses. And so we're really, really close to that happening. So I said before, I think 19 is going to be a big year. I think the second half of this year, I think we have to see some consolidation. But the infrastructure will be there. And then it's who's going to be first.
Barry, thanks so much for your time. It's great to speak with you. Hope you'll come back to Fast sometime soon.
See you.
Barry Silbert, Digital Currency Group. Still ahead, we've got much more on Wall Street's love and hate for crypto, with the CEO of the first Bitcoin-focused company to receive funding from a major bank. Circle's Jeremy Allaire. That's later on in the show. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC, First in Business Worldwide. In the meantime, here's what else is coming up on Fast.
Earnings season is heating up, and there's one major Dow stock traders say could break out to new highs when it reports in the next week. We'll give you the name when Fast Money returns.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
I love Leonard Skinner.
82?
Skinner's good.
Yeah. Little Runaway by Jovi.
85.
I say 83. What do you say?
Is that
folks?
Bon Jovi?
No, that's I say TDC, Pete. Oh, you knew that. Pete.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Shares of American Express tumbling after hours following its earnings report. Seema Modi's breaking it down back at headquarters. Seema.
And Melissa, here's a story. A big concern is the rise in expenses related to card member spending on rewards, which jumped 11% from the same period last year. It's a sign that consumers are increasingly using their points to redeem hotel rooms and flights. CEO Steve Squeri telling investors on the call that new partnerships with Marriott, Hilton, Amazon will help drive future growth.
Just last month, we announced a multi-year partnership with Amazon, which will include a new co-branded small business credit card in the U.S. This is an exciting opportunity and a great example of why we are the small business partner of choice, because of our ability to bring value to partners and their customers by leveraging our brand, innovative technology, data analytics, and other unique assets. In addition, we also introduce new value propositions for Hilton and Marriott small business card members in the U.S.
Squeri also said it's developing artificial intelligence, machine learning, and blockchain capabilities to better serve its customers, but that's not enough to appease Wall Street. The stock is down 3% in after-hours trade. Melissa?
All right. Seema, thank you. Seema Modi. What are we saying on AXP, Tim?
Well, I'll tell you what. On valuation, I think that's the most difficult thing. These guys are executing. I think a little addition to their loan provision has people a bit concerned, but it's a company that's executing across the board, and I certainly wouldn't run far from it. I don't need to own it.
I wouldn't run from it at all. As a matter of fact, I'd add to it. I own calls right now. I actually would consider buying more because I think this is going to absolutely be erased very quickly.
I don't think the valuation's that unreasonable. It trades, you know, 12 forward. And a half, 13 times forward earnings. It's not crazy. They probably have 10% EPS growth rate. The fact that people are using more points, that's interesting. Maybe the consumer's not as healthy as we think. I'm not sure that's why the stock is trading lower. I think it's trading lower because they didn't really raise guidance. They just they basically guided to the higher end. I think the street was looking for more. But I'm with Pete on this one. I think it could
stock
go
ran 6% in the last month into this print. So it's really butting up against its prior all-time high. It's been consolidating since that really strong Q1 print. So to me, I think anywhere above 95, I think this thing is a buy on valuation. And I don't think you have to worry about some of those things with the points. I think it makes a good value proposition, especially when they talk about these other programs they're rolling out.
All right. Speaking of earnings, Microsoft set to report after the bell tomorrow. The options market is implying some interesting moves on the results. So, Dan, what'd you say?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, Microsoft is obviously one of the biggest stocks in the world. The options market is implying about a 3.5% move in either direction. The stock today closed very near an all-time high. The average over the last four quarters has been about 2.5% movement after earnings. Call volume today was three times that of puts. It was a lot of rolling activity. So, again, with the stock at all-time highs, you know, it, to me, appeared that was rolling of overwrites. If some somebody was long the stock. They're selling calls against it to kind of take in a little premium as option volume or option premiums are elevated into the earnings. And here's a stock that the 110 level seemed to be the one where one investor thinks that it could be capped. And if you look at that chart right there, 97.5, it's the intersection of that uptrend from the 1 year and the breakout level from earlier in the year. That seems to be great support.
You love Microsoft.
Look at the wedge.
I do. I absolutely do. And I think it's going to 110 quicker than people think. It's made this move up to 100, stalled for quite a long time. The buying that we've seen over the last couple of weeks in there has been absolutely incredible. The volume.
Right, but Pete, these 10, are August 3rd weekly. Someone's selling the 110 calls. The stock's at 105. That's up 5%. And seems like a pretty reasonable call away level.
But the day before, they bought 15,000 calls as well in July. So a lot of people are trying to play into this earnings, and they expect this thing to go higher. I'm one of them.
Giddy
all
up.
Right. For more options action, check out the full show Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. Still ahead, we will be joined by Circle founder Jeremy Allaire, who says blockchain will revolutionize every aspect of the financial industry. That interview is coming up in just a few minutes. Welcome back to Fast Money. You're looking at a live shot of the 8th annual Delivering Alpha Conference in New York City, where Bitcoin has been the talk of the town. And rightfully so, Bitcoin is soaring 15% this week to its highest level in more than a month after MasterCard won a patent that could allow Bitcoin transactions on credit cards. That came amid reports that BlackRock was potentially looking into a Bitcoin ETF earlier this week. We should note Larry Fink did dismiss those reports. Nonetheless, both are signs that sentiment could be shifting for the cryptocurrency after a tough few months. That is good news for our next guest. His startup became the first Bitcoin-focused company to receive funding from a major bank, Goldman Sachs. They also acquired Poloniex, one of the biggest crypto exchanges, and are now valued at almost $3 billion. Jeremy Allaire is the co-founder and CEO of Circle. He joins us now from the Delivering Alpha Conference, where we spoke earlier today on a panel with Barry Silbert, who we just had on the show as well. Jeremy, good to see you again.
We mentioned
the latest round of funding. Bitmain was one of the lead funders in this case with $110 million that it threw in. It's the biggest Bitcoin mining company in China. And you said that your vision in terms of how you guys could revolutionize the financial industry's infrastructure really aligned. So what are you seeing here?
Yeah, I mean, I think, so Jihan Wu, who's the founder and CEO of Bitmain, we do have a very shared vision, and the vision is that this new infrastructure, blockchain infrastructure, in particular public blockchains like Bitcoin and Ethereum, and there are others, is a new foundational infrastructure that we can build on top of. We can build applications to replace a lot of fiduciary trust applications that we have today, whether that's fiat money itself, or financial contracts that are used for things like raising capital, issuing debt, transacting, really any kind of trust-oriented, record-keeping-oriented application in the world can be improved with crypto assets and blockchain technology. And we believe it's just going to be a fundamental horizontal technology as broadly adopted as the internet is today.
It seems like there are a lot of bets being placed right now, Jeremy's bets, so to speak, in terms of financial institutions deciding that they're going to build on a particular platform, whether it be Ethereum or Ripple or Stellar. Do you have a sense as to which platforms you think will be in the lead or be in the lead for certain parts of this industry?
Sure. You know, I think one of the things that really catalyzed the market last year was actually that Ethereum in particular kind of got to a place where you could build apps on top of it, you could issue new tokens on top of it, you could create new kinds of financial contracts using the smart contract technology. That catalyzed, obviously, the ICO movement, if you want to call it that. And it also catalyzed a lot of competing infrastructures to Ethereum. Right now, when you look at sort of developer activity, and that's really a proxy, whether you're looking at apps in an app store like the Apple App Store or Android, Google Play, or apps on an operating system, but developers that are building things. Right now, Ethereum has an enormous amount of developer activity, but a lot of really exciting new platforms are coming out, EOS, NEO, Cardano, and there are other next generation projects. It's a really fertile space in terms of the fundamental technical and infrastructure it's really like a new infrastructure layer of the internet that we can all build on top of.
You know, you sounded really excited just now and also during the panel about the killer apps that are being built right now. How does an investor profit off of the killer apps? Is it by buying Cardano and NEO, the tokens? Obviously, investors can't necessarily invest the way that you do or others do, like Barry.
Sure. I mean, I think there's obviously like kind of fundamental assets that are like these core digital commodities, and these core digital commodities are used to incentivize and secure these blockchains. So Bitcoin is obviously, has the most market cap. It's one of the most secure networks if you think about the amount of computing that secures it. But you know, new assets like Ether you know, really represent a commodity that's maybe a little bit more like oil. It's a commodity that you need in order to fuel applications built on top of it. And that's, you know, I think as people, as investors look at this, they can invest at the kind of protocol level, at the infrastructure level, and then increasingly we're starting to see apps that are built on top of this. And that's really where I think we're going to start to see, you know, more of the exciting opportunities as we go into the second half of this year, as the focus isn't just on these core commodities like Bitcoin and Ether, but it really gets into the applications and higher level utilities that people are building on top of it.
Jeremy, it's great to speak with you. We hope you'll visit Fast Money again soon. I know it's loud over there, so thanks for bearing with us. Jeremy Allaire, this co-founder of Circle. They're also doing a stable coin, which is also...
So you asked a question. How does the viewer at home invest in this Web 3.0? And I think it's not too different than Web 1.0 when you were buying Yahoo or Amazon or whatever. Those stocks had these crazy run-ups, and then they lost 90% of their value in the, you know, in the aftermath when that bubble exploded. Now, we're down 70% in crypto from the highs in January. I would just say, go open a Poloniex account. Go open a Coinbase account. Put 1%. Mark Lazary just told you he's got 1% of his net worth. That's how you're going to participate in it. You have to manage your risk. It's not something you want to be outsized, but you want to have that exposure. That's how you do it at home.
All right. Speaking of blockchain, IBM talking about it moments ago after reporting its earnings. Josh Lipton's got more. Josh.
Yeah, let's stick with this theme, Melissa. IBM's Martin Schroeder just sitting down with our own Jim Cramer on Mad Money, talking all things blockchain. Take a listen.
People love our blockchain. We have more blockchains running today in the world than anybody else. Okay. The reason we have that is because of the security that comes with it, encryption. Our blockchain runs on an IBM mainframe. That doesn't matter to them, as long as it gets encrypted all the time. So one is the fact that it's secure and it's encrypted.
Also, Melissa, we should point out IBM is reaffirming that guidance. They're still looking for EPS of at least 1380 for the year. And finally, I want to point out Cisco shares. Check those out in the after hours. We can confirm this report that Amazon is actually denying it's going to challenge Cisco with those switch sales. Remember, that report hit and took Cisco down pretty hard. Melissa, back to you.
All right. Thank you very much, Josh Lipton. That report was that they would AWS would do white box switches.
Cisco won't be Amazon, so you look at valuation, say at 14 times it's reasonable. It's been trading sideways at 42 for a while. Does it take out the 45 level in the August earnings? I say yes. But IBM is the interesting one quickly.
Really?
I'll say this. Okay. IBM's been in the desert now for many years, right? I mean, they zigged when they should have zagged. They were so far behind the curve. Microsoft figured it out 4 or 5 years ago. Maybe, this is IBM's Microsoft moment. Blockchain could be to IBM what the cloud was, right, to Microsoft. Just throwing it out there.
I think IBM's getting more credit right now than they deserve for that. Cisco, on the other hand, not getting enough credit for what they're doing in cyber and cybersecurity. I think you want to oversimplify your way to get exposure to cybersecurity. Cisco's the play tomorrow in addition to their
I get more and more excited about IBM along with you. The strategic side of what they're trying to do, that's
cloud,
becoming a big portion of what they really are. But the blockchain thing. It's another way to be involved in what we've been talking about. We talk about crypto all the time and all of this area of the world. They are the biggest. So why wouldn't that be at least a piece?
What does that mean in terms of size?
Because to me, what it actually means
is... nothing. I mean, it's nothing in revenue.
Right.
It's not moving the needle.
But this is going forward. And by the way, 3 quarters in a row where their revenues have grown. So they're doing things right at IBM. It's not perfect. It's not the transition we saw out of Microsoft. But I think this is a stock that's been on this little ascension ever since.
Unfortunately, when they have their CFO on Cramer's show and he wants us to talk about only blockchain, this is a business that they do $80 billion in sales a year. And finally, they just had their first year of year revenue growth in a very long time, but you talk about this is a few $100 million in revenues, and remember what he's saying: these are private blockchains on their servers. They're just ledgers.
One thing I would say real quick:
I got those tomatoes.
You guys used to say this about the services section of Apple, and a lot of people are still saying this about the video section of what's on Facebook. Small but growing, and that's the areas I think
that's
you have
true,
to focus
Pete.
On.
All right, up next, final trades. Back of the final trade, Pete.
A name that we briefly touched on earlier, delivering alpha, Biogen. This name's going higher. I love that pipeline. Giddy up.
Tim Seymour.
A hot name from delivering alpha, Take-Two. A name we like. Go with that one.
Dan Nathan.
Yeah, I don't think American Express was mentioned at Delivery Alpha, but Tim mentioned it. And I think if it gets overdone in the high 90s, I think you buy it tomorrow.
Wow. You're listening to Tim. You should listen to him.
Barely.
Guy.
That was nice, Dan.
You know, we do all get along.
Sometimes.
The folks at home should know.
It's true. Despite all of this.
Bro hugs, Guy.
I don't want people, you know, it's, I don't want people to be sad. You know what made me happy today?
What?
That Huntsman presentation.
Oh, yes.
Answered all our questions. I mean, I thought Huntsman evaluation
very
compelling.
You seem happy.
I'm Melissa Lee. See you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast Money.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.